The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Thursday, Gary, good morning. How are you?
Wow. Good. Just a lot going on. A ton going on. Coming up here, some of the details of the Starbucks training that you'll want to hear.
Yeah.
Because it's really, really good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not good stuff in the way of anti-bias training, but good stuff in the way of entertainment. Of just raw entertainment.
Well, we said weeks ago that that's exactly what would come out of it. We're going to hear what went on. I mean, people are going to leak, you know, what happened during that training. Because those people are the employees of Starbucks, and I can assure you that a number of them are resentful that the company painted with that broad brush. And basically, by putting them all through that training, we're all putting them all in that corner of unconscious bias.
And we'll also get to the point that we talked about this before, and this was way, way back when, a couple of years ago, when Howard Schultz, who was the CEO, came up with the bright idea that they quickly exited stage left on, you should get into a conversation with the baristas about race, that they would basically write race on your coffee cup, and then you get into the discussions on it. And then you remember he did that full-page ad, and the full-page ad talked about the fact that most people probably don't even know the ethnicities of their neighbors, and you should get to know the ethnicities of your neighbors. And we said, well, actually not. You shouldn't care about the ethnicity of your neighbors. You shouldn't care about the color of the skin.
Nope.
It's interesting because they address that. They address the fact that it's wrong to be colorblind.
Yeah.
Think about this.
That's how they believe.
That it's wrong to be colorblind, that you need to be, as the term they used, color brave. Well, wait a minute. If you're color brave, which means you're noticing the color of every person that comes in, and then you treat them in a certain way without getting to know them, that means your reaction is based on what? It can only be based on one thing. The stereotype that you have as to way those people should be treated, instead of treating them as individuals.
You're going to treat them based on the color of their skin.
Which is bigotry in itself.
Yes.
And so the anti-bias training has become bias training.
Yes.
So we'll get to that coming up here in a little bit. And we would say, tell us where we're wrong on this, because, this is something, race. Remember what Holder said, that we're cowards because we don't want to talk about race. Mm-hmm. And what we found out is really the left doesn't want to talk about race.
Yeah.
We love talking about race. It's our because
anytime,
because it's an easy thing to discuss. It isn't a complicated thing to discuss at all. So we'll get to that coming up here. The Roseanne fallout and lessons to be learned. You and I talking about this in our pre-show meeting. We'll get to those lessons here in just a moment. Is President Trump about to become the tariff president? I mean, we've been closer now than we have before, where now it looks like they're going to, he wants to do the 25% import tax on foreign vehicles, and also wants to do the tariff on aluminum and steel from Europe. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that Trump has is the economy.
Mm-hmm.
The one big thing. You get rid of the economy and Republicans don't have growth. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
The stock market reacts when the president talks about tariffs and it goes down. Why? Because the markets know it's anti-growth.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts companies. It hurts workers.
Yeah.
And so it'll be really interesting. I've noticed that he might have been out there. I've been busy the last couple of days, but I haven't seen his chief economic advisor out lately.
I haven't seen Kudlow in two or three weeks.
You haven't seen Kudlow.
Remember, what did we hear from, was it Giuliani or somebody else? Giuliani had said recently, I think it was last week, that he hadn't spoken to the president in a couple of weeks. And then someone else also made the observation that Larry Kudlow had not met with the president in a couple of weeks. Well, how could you not be, as as the president's attorney, how could you not be meeting with him every day with everything that's going on? And as a chief economic advisor to the president, how could you not be at least talking with him? Maybe not FaceTime, communicating with him at some level, because right now we're in the midst of it, and the president has been leading the charge on both fronts. I mean, the president is looking to, you know, wrap up the Mueller thing. He wants to get that thing done, and so he should be very active with his attorney. The other thing on China and tariffs, he's been very vocal. He's creating policy on the fly. When you're doing that, I don't know if Larry Kudlow can afford to get out of, arm's length distance with the president at any given time right now. Or is it just the opposite?
Well, because there is no consistent message. It's changing every day.
And that's my last question. Is it just the opposite because there's no controlling the message? If you're Larry Kudlow and you can't get through to the president, or the president doesn't want to talk to you because the president come to the conclusion that you're wrong, even though he may respect and, trust Kudlow, you're wrong and I'm not going to do it that way. Look, from day one, what was the motto? Let Donald be Donald. Let Trump be Trump.
Well, the thing is, the things that he wants to put tariffs on will hurt some of the biggest demographics that voted for him.
Yes.
That's one of the problems.
Those flyover states, those manufacturing states, the blue states that turned for him.
Yep. And so for the life of us, nobody's ever been able to get a handle. Trump will talk about a lot, and you can get an idea of what he thinks on quite a few things, but on tariffs and economics, and we said this about President Obama too. You never get to the heart of what their base mindset is on economics. You know more about the two idiots overnight here. You know more precisely because we get into the specifics of what we believe about economics. Mm-hmm. But as we said before, if President Trump believes that putting a huge tax on the American consumer is going to boost the economy, then he is economically illiterate completely.
Mm-hmm.
He, as we've said about tariffs, he couldn't be more wrong. If it is actually about national security, then he's got a point, as we've talked about with China, with the stealing of technology.
Sure.
But when it comes to Europe, when it comes to some of our best trading partners, to sit there and say, no, we just wish to dominate the market here, and so we're going to put tariffs, and we're going to charge our customers more. We're going to charge we're going to put a new tax, and a huge tax, by the way. If you look at the auto tariffs, massive tariff, that we're going to skyrocket the cost of automobiles for our people, and that's a good thing, then he is an economic illiterate.
Kim Kardashian would be able to afford it, but nobody else would.
Yeah. And so we'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit. Wait. Did Hillary endorse Governor Cuomo over Sex and the City star Cynthia Nixon because she's a tool of men?
Oh, wow. And also, is it because she's also anti-LGBT?
Is Hillary anti-LGBT? And remember what she said just a month ago? Probably she said it here in the last week. It's just, made the news a month ago when she's out there. The reason the people didn't vote for her is because, women vote for men because men tell women what to do.
Oh, so told her who to endorse.
So did Bill tell her? Is it the men that are telling Hillary not to vote for Cynthia Nixon and to vote for, to support Governor Cuomo of New York? What in the world's going on here?
Is Hillary a homophobe?
Is Hillary a homophobe? And what was the other thing, too? What were they calling women that voted for men?
Misogynist.
They were
self-misogynist.
Self-misogynist, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were. Is Hillary a self-misogynist and a homophobe? That's our big question for the day.
A self-misogynistic homophobe.
So, yes. Is she a self-misogynistic homophobe by her own definition?
This is how she labeled women who voted for Trump.
Right. This is not. Again, we are not making the accusation based on anything.
We're using her own standard.
We're using her standard, as we always do in the show. We'll tell you about the White House official who says he feels duped by the FBI spy informant who spied. New polls are out for the midterm. Interesting. Mm. We'll have that coming up. We'll tell you about the mayor of California who wants to pay people not to shoot people.
Well, like I've never shot anyone. How much money do they owe me?
Well, but you don't plan on shooting it. They're looking at people who plan on shooting. You know, what was the Tom Cruise movie
AI? Was it AI?
No, where they had the women floating in the water who could predict who was going to...
Artificial intelligence.
No, that was
the other movie.
Yeah, that was the women who were in the
precogs is what they called it.
In the bathtub and
were in the liquid. They spend most of their time in the bathtub.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And very little time at the hairdresser.
It was a precursor to The Shape of Water, apparently.
What was it? Law and Order, Criminal Intent.
You know the movie we're talking about. Law enforcement predicted the future, and they would arrest you before you committed the crime.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is basically what they would do is, you know, they don't predict it, but they look at the people who might possibly commit it, gang members, and they say, we'll pay you a certain amount of cash not to shoot people. Will there be a reboot of Roseanne without Roseanne? Somebody asked that question yesterday. Somebody asked a question. Well, would another network pick up Roseanne? And we said, no, that's not going to happen. By the way, did you hear Tom Arnold said that what they could have made out of this new one could have been in the over $1 billion?
Sure. Because I think if they had changed it, by the way, the movie was Minority Report. I don't know that you can use that. You couldn't use that for the name of that movie anymore. Not today, you couldn't. But the whole thing with... think about it. The whole thing about, Roseanne and what Tom Arnold said is that if you go back to that style of comedy, and they were going to take... ABC had already announced it, and she did, too. They weren't going to be as political in the next season. The writing would just go back to... the old Roseanne writing, which was pretty good. And it would be of, middle class, working class family that goes through everything, a number of things that are common with millions of other families. That would have worked. I think that would have worked. I don't know that it would have been a number one show every week, but I think they could have gotten, several more years out of it. And yeah, that's a $1 billion venture. And ABC, cut that cord. That's, again, ABC has the right to make whatever decision they're going to make about their property. Whether it costs them $1 billion or not, we can agree and disagree, but there was no way in the world, and they knew this, there was no way in the world you were going to, by the time that happened, I texted you about, it was after 12 noon on that day on our time, and people were on Twitter calling for her firing, and I mean celebrities and everybody else. Apparently, one of the other actresses on the show had called her agent already and said, take me off that show. This was going to be, you're going to be shamed. You were going to be humiliated. There was going to be no ending. It would be a non-ending protest against ABC. There's no way around it. You can say, well, they should never be pressured. They shouldn't be bowing to the liberals, or they shouldn't be bowing to certain groups or protesters. Sorry, that's their business. That's their decision.
John Goodman really knows how to act act outside of acting in Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, he knows how to respond to questions like this.
He knows how to respond,
yes. He said, look, everything's going to be fine. Right. And I'm not going to say any more because I don't want to cause any more trouble. End of story.
I love everybody.
Yeah.
He said that before. In past controversies with Roseanne, he said the same thing. Yeah. I love everybody.
Yeah, I respect everybody. I wish everybody well. And they were asking him because ABC also said they withdrew the consideration for Emmy nominations. And he said, look, I've been up there a number of times, and so I probably wasn't going to win an Emmy anyway. So it's no big deal. Everything's fine. But that right there is classic John Goodman, because he knows not to step in it, not to be. He's an actor. He's a comedian. He's an actor. He's a guy that just wants to do the work.
If they do a reboot without Roseanne, one thing, and I have never watched the show much, but one thing when I did watch the show, to me, from my limited knowledge of the show that mm-hmm. I have seen, though, mm-hmm. is the scenes with her and Dan are the show.
Yeah.
That to
yeah,
me is yeah. what that to
That's
me.
That's the heart of the show.
That to me is the heart of that show, is the chemistry between those two characters.
Right. Now, I could see Lori Metcalf being, you know, kind of a thorn in the side to Dan and Dan carrying that show. I don't know that it would go on very right. long. I don't right. know how successful yeah. it would be.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Eric, I'm Gary, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up on the bottom of the hour, we have to get to the Starbucks training because right. it really opens up your eyes. I remember Eric Holder saying that Americans are, cowards for not wishing to talk race. And as we've said, well, what we find is that the left doesn't really want to open up about race. And when they do, it's really fascinating as to where their mindset is. Mm-hmm. And I'll go here to this is from Fox News at the, you know, looking at the actual session that Starbucks held. At the start of the session, Starbucks CEO Kevin Johnson introduced the topics for the day's lessons, including a history of discrimination as well as lessons in being color brave, the latter of which is explained as an alternative to being color blind, where a person's racial identity is not ignored, but rather seen and respected for what it is. Quote, here's my belief. Growing up, there was a term called colorblind, which described a learning behavior of pretending not to notice race. That doesn't even make sense, says Johnson. So today we're starting a new journey, talking about race directly, what my friends and Starbucks board member calls being color brave. And the interesting point here is where he says, being colorblind, that should be the goal, where you're colorblind. You don't care about somebody's color.
Right.
Which he described as a learning behavior of pretending not to notice race.
No, that's how you think.
That's
I'm
how
not
you
pretending.
Think.
I'm not saying I don't notice race. I'm saying I don't care what the race is.
Yeah, I don't care. I clearly know. I can look at a person and say, okay, your skin is whiter than that person's skin or more pale. I'm going to say whiter. I'm not really white. It's sort of pale.
It's kind of a
bleach
weird color.
Bleach.
That only the Scotch and the Irish can pull off, really. In fact, I think we kind of invented it.
And so we'll get to that here in a little bit, because what he is talking about, in our humble opinion, leads to bigotry and stereotyping and prejudice.
For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
Flash flood watches and warnings will continue for the lower Tennessee Valley, portions of western Kentucky, southern Illinois, and southern Indiana, and parts of the western Carolinas, as well as northern Georgia. Areas that saw rain yesterday east of the Mississippi will continue to see those showers today. The bulk of the rainstorm will stay up in the northeast, in and around eastern Pennsylvania. That's where we'll see a slow-moving warm front today and an area of low pressure that will cause the unsettled weather east of Harrisburg into New York City. More rain for Montana and northern Idaho, as well as Seattle today, where the high temperature will be around 67. Decreasing clouds in Los Angeles, high 69. Denver, sunny and 91. It'll be clear in Dallas today, but temperatures could break 100. Mostly sunny early, then a chance of thunderstorms in Chicago. High today, 89. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
And the drinking game continues. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Before we get into the whole Starbucks thing here, well, the Starbucks color brave philosophy that they have, the lessons that Starbucks had also focused on prejudices in public spaces. And the Starbucks executive vice president, Roseanne Williams, gave an example about how to treat people, claiming that she observed a barista approach a customer who was being, or was using uncomfortable language. And by the way, I am doubting that what she said actually happened. Okay. I have great doubts because people don't speak like this. But here is, she said she observed a barista approach a customer who was using uncomfortable language, who was basically cursing in the store. And here's apparently what the barista said, and this is how you should say it. So there you are, you're a barista, somebody is cursing in your store. You're supposed to go up to them and say, as this barista said, quote, "You are in our store every day, and we love that this is your third place. But from one human to another human, the language that you are using is making other customers uncomfortable. So either you have to change your behavior and stay and be part of our third place, or I'm going to ask you to leave, and you can come back at a later time when you feel like you can be part of our third place. And in fact, if you want to go have a seat somewhere else, you know, I will bring you over a cup of water just to make sure that it is a great rest of your day," end of quote.
I'm sorry, what's this third place?
I have no idea.
What's the second place?
But I'm sort of, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of, I'll never forget, I was taking a trip with my sisters and my nephew. This goes back years. My nephew was only, you know, 7 or 8 years old. And we're driving down the road, and he's in the back seat with one of my other sisters, and my other sister's in the, you know, in the front seat with me. So we're going down the road, and he's just, nah, you know, just trying to irritate people.
Right.
And I'll never forget my sisters looking at him saying, look, you know, you have to understand that your voice is very offensive. And when you do and make these kind of sounds, the sound waves enter our earlobes and then travel down our ear canal. Okay, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you get my point. Travel down our ear canal and then really hit our eardrum and is very irritating. So if you could please, he continues it. And they're going through the song as well. But you have to understand, look, we just explained to you, and I'm sitting there driving, and you know me, you can see me, the flame just keeps getting bigger and bigger inside me. I just turn around, look at him, go, shut up! The whole place goes quiet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got what my kids call the look.
Yeah.
I mean, we've gone through this. I actually did this. I didn't do it deliberately to a kid on a plane. We were on vacation. My wife and I flying to our destination, getting our week together, our week out of each 52, we get one. We're on that plane. And that kid is behind us. He's climbing. This kid one day will summit Everest. I'm convinced. At that point, he was already at 30,000 feet, so he was pretty close. But he's all over, and he's probably 3 or 4. I mean, you know, so he's a decent-sized toddler. He's not a baby that is just learning to stand up and everything else. Well, the mom is letting this kid, and I didn't think it was too safe. I was wondering where the crew was thinking, but this kid was climbing over the mom's shoulder, and I mean just doing, I mean, he was climbing over the back of their seat, of course, you know, kicking our seat and the whole thing. My wife, very kindly, you know, we're grandparents. She's always got a mint in her purse. It's a grandparent rule. It's a grandma rule. Well, she, even Madonna carries them. So she pulls out the mint, and you know, would you like to, you know, give him? It was one of the soft mints, not hard candy. because that would be dangerous as fast as this kid was moving. So she hands it. Oh, well, thank you very much. And then I thought to myself, yeah, honey, that was a good move. Give the kid sugar. So at some point, actually what I was doing is I was turning around to see if there was a line at the bathroom, right, at the back of the plane. So I turn around, but the first thing that hits my eye is that kid. And I'm also the first thing that hits his eye in that moment. And that look, and my kids tell me, that's all you ever had to do.
Oh, I see.
So I give that look. Yeah, oh yeah, you've seen it a million times.
Because I'm like a kid.
Exactly. So I turn around and I'm looking, and I'm, again, my intent is to look to see if there's anybody standing in line at the bathroom. Is it clear? Mm-hmm. Can I get up, move about, and go back there? I turn around and that kid and I lock eyes. He stops as if it was weird. It was odd. And I felt all powerful in that moment. And he decided, for some whatever reason, he just looked at me, and as he was staring at me, he slides slowly back down into his seat. He looks over and says, Mommy, will you help me with this? It was his seatbelt. At that moment, I became the baby king. To your point, your sister was going out of her way for her nephew. And I'm sure my wife would have loved to have had a talk with this young man that would have been along the same lines for this young child. I'm with you on this whole barista thing. I don't know what this third place is.
Well,
but I don't buy the fact that someone said that to someone who was cursing in one of their stores.
Right. And to repeat again, this is what Starbucks, the executive vice president, Roseanne Williams. And by the way, I don't believe her. I don't believe this scenario ever happened. Why? Because people don't talk this way in the real world. That's why. In the real world, people don't talk this way. That's why I don't buy it. And I'm sure that you had a ton of Starbucks employees go, right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But here's what she said. She claimed she saw a barista do, which is the correct way to approach a customer who is cursing in the store. I'm going to read it again because I think it's very important to understand the absolute BS, as Dad would call it, poop for the peasants, that Starbucks elite liberal management is throwing out to their workers.
Yeah.
By the way, something that will never work. Quote, you are in our store every day, and we love that this is your third place. But from one human to another human, the language that you are using is making other customers uncomfortable. So either you have to change your behavior and stay and be part of our third place, or I'm going to have to ask you to leave, and you can come back at a later time when you feel that you can be part of our third place. And in fact, if you want to go have a seat, I'll bring you over a cup of water just to make sure that it's a great rest of your day. End of quote. I'm sorry. I'm calling her on that one.
Yep.
That never happened.
Nope.
That's pure poop for the peasants.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
And so when you look at that and combine with, as the CEO Kevin Johnson said, be color brave, because this is really, really important. Here's my belief. Growing up, there was a term called colorblind, which described a learning behavior of, as he says, this is a quote now, of pretending not to notice race. That doesn't ever even make sense, said Johnson. So today we are starting with a new journey, talking about race directly, what my friend and Starbucks board member Melody Hobson calls being color brave. This is where you is the alternative to colorblind, where in a person's racial identity is not ignored, but rather seen and respected for what it is. Well, you can't make that call.
No.
You can't look at a person and say, they're black, therefore I must treat them this way. They're white, therefore I must treat them this way.
No. You treat them based on the behavior if there's an issue. Because what are you going to do? Based on that thought, does that mean that a a person, a white person, who is not a person of color, gets thrown out sooner? What you're saying is there should be different consideration.
Right.
Because of the skin color, you don't know what this person might have gone through, what their experience, you don't know what I've gone through.
Right. You can't, if you're, you need to deal with everybody as an individual. And as we have said, to them, colorblind means pretending. And we've often said this before. We've often said, why does the left, the first thing they throw out is that you're a racist?
Right.
And, you know, it's something that we've never been able to, you know, understand until I've never forget you and I talking about it. I don't know, maybe it was 10 years ago and said, ah, we might get it now.
Right.
All of a sudden the light went off in our head and said, they're projecting that people do this. If people think a certain way, they project out the way that they think and they assume that you think that way. When you look at the left and you look at what they do, they judge everything. Their identity politics is judging everything by the physical characteristics or sexuality of a person.
Mm-hmm.
That I should judge you based on this. Well, the only way that you can do that is based on prejudice and stereotypes. Well, stereotypes, which then leads to prejudice and bigotry.
Right.
Because there's no way that you can know about me based on my skin color.
Right.
Or my sexuality. Or the things that I think. You don't know that until you actually talk to me. There's no way you can figure that out by the clothes that I wear.
No.
Or the tattoo that I have. I don't, by the way. or my skin color.
You got it removed.
But there's no way. The only way you can do that is preconceived stereotypes.
Right.
And this is what we have said all along. So what Starbucks is promoting, in my humble opinion, is that if you don't ignore somebody's color, well, number one, they claim you can only pretend to ignore it. Well, as you said, well, no, I can observe and I can see somebody's skin color, but I don't care.
I'm not going to say, something silly like, I don't even notice. I'm going to say something very real like, I don't care.
Well, it's like I notice blonde hair versus red hair.
Yeah.
It doesn't make me judge. Well, except, you know,
well, we talk about except the Dutch.
Yeah, except
when it comes to the Dutch,
you know, the, you know, red hair, though. I did read, though, that the other day that said red hair women are really smarter. So
I have a couple of nieces who have red hair and they're very smart.
All right. So the only judgments we're going to make from now on are based on hair color.
Well,
the only stereotypes.
I mean, I think it's just probably safe to ask a redhead for help with your homework.
I'm prejudiced against people with freckles.
Exactly.
That's what, and so when you look, and this is something that we've always thought, that they're obsessed with skin color, that they are the ones that make the judgments. And as soon as you do that, as soon as you say, well, look, I'm not that I don't notice color, but I don't care. I never prejudge a person because I don't know what their background is. I don't know what their experience is. I don't know. I have no idea.
Right.
And so until I talk to them, I don't know how to treat them. But if they are cursing loudly in a store, they have given me an indication that they don't respect. That's the message that they send to me. I don't respect your property.
Mm-hmm.
So then the only way that I can attempt to respond is based on the fact that they don't respect my property, irrespective of their skin color.
And they don't respect your patrons either. And right. Your job should be to create, if that person is creating less than a comfortable and pleasant environment, you need to end it. You need to get them out of the store.
Tell us where we're wrong. Tell us where we're right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. We'll get your calls and comments coming up on the top of the hour. But it's really interesting because I when we talk about race, one of the things that has been so tough to get from the left is for them to open up. And I will give this one thing to Starbucks. At least they're forced to open up about how they think about, you know, race, and it's very clear when you see the management of Starbucks, who we view as some of the elitist liberals of all the liberals that exist out there, is the fact of the preconceived stereotypes that they believe is part of an anti-bias program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because what they're stating is, no, you know, that you need to be color brave. The only way that you can be color brave means that you have preconceived notions about what somebody of color must be, and therefore you need to approach them in a different way based on their skin color.
Right.
How do you think stereotypes, then prejudice and bigotry begin?
Right.
It's by that.
You're teaching them to be, instead of subconsciously biased, to be openly biased.
Yes.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Well, so there you go. As we cover the Starbucks training and break it down into what we view are the problems with it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting watching, you know, that kind of play out in the media. By the way, I tend to think that the company itself was leaking some of that from, you know, the training. I tend to believe there's some logic from their perspective to leaking some of that out, because again, they conducted that training and had those elements in that training because they thought it was right. This hour for Freightliner, run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. I mean, when you look at the breakdown of, you know, how they were going to approach it and why they did it and everything else, it was really about what? Publicity. It wasn't necessarily about the training itself. It was that they wanted the world to know or believe that they were going, that they had changed, that they had righted a wrong, that they had acknowledged that they were wrong, and they were going to get all of their employees, you know, on board with this new mission or this new, you know, company policy or whatever you want to, you know, describe it as. It comes from that mindset. And if they believe in their mind, if they believe, well, this is the righteous thing to do, then I believe there's that, along that same logic, then they believe in promoting that. So I tend to believe the company doesn't have a problem with that information getting out there.
No, which I think is good, because one of the things we have always asked is that the left be intellectually honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they discuss anything, the one thing that we've always objected to is the left trying to pretend that they're one thing when they're another thing. But here, clearly they let out and they come out with the concept of being color brave, which is you really can't be color blind, is what they believe, because they think that way.
Mm-hmm.
As they said, color blind is pretending that race doesn't matter. Well, to you it is.
Right.
Yeah, you think that way. You know, I think about all my experiences in life, and I'm glad I was brought up the way that I was brought up. I'm glad that, you know, it was from my college experience, my first job. I mean, it was a melting pot of people. You know, I was just telling you that, and I've mentioned this before, that I've played, you know, sandlot basketball on the courts of Chicago, in Florida, in New York, Rockford, Illinois, Texas, my entire life for 45 years, I've been playing on courts all over, you know, the the United States. And the majority of the time, I'm one of the few white people there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the reality. It's just what, you know, the reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling you again that this past Monday, because I'm back playing basketball again, because everything feels pretty healthy. When on the court again, I'm the only white guy on the court.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of people. We're just shooting around before we're playing. And a group of, you know, ball players come out of another car, and probably another five or six black gentlemen get out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And come walking up, and they said, "Everybody's here." One guy, "Everybody's here, even Larry Bird." Well, that was, of course, directed towards me. Now, was I offended
because
by that?
Because you're tall and you have blonde hair.
Yeah, exactly. was I offended by that? No, I'm glad they didn't call me Sean Bradley. No. But it's like, you know, there's Larry Bird. And I turned and I said, "Really?" I said, "Maybe the bad back. That's about the only thing that makes." And everybody, you know, had a great laugh. And in my whole life, I've never had any preconceived notion of anybody based on skin color. I don't care. I treat everybody the same. It's just...
You treat everybody horribly.
Right, I treat everybody horribly. I treat everybody like I do on the radio. And no, actually, I'm much nicer off the radio.
Huh.
And, you know, you treat everybody as an individual. It's not something that is hard to do. I would feel so insulted if I was sitting at that Starbucks meeting as an employee or manager. I'd say, "I can't work for this company. It's ridiculous."
Mm-hmm. Because projecting that. What you're doing when you're a company like that, you're projecting your mindset onto others.
And by the way, 99.9% of the people that I've met out there, I'd say 99.9% from... I'm actually thinking 100% of the people out there that I've met are all individuals. They all react in different ways. There is no stereotypes for anybody based on skin color, sexuality, whatever. Everybody is different, but it's not based on their skin color. It's based on the substance of their character and their individual personalities, which can be shaped by a number of different things.
I don't know how we lost that over the last 50 plus years, lost sight of that, those words. How you judge someone not by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. How did we lose sight of that? How is that, first of all, how is that very difficult? It's not for most people. It isn't. It's very basic. I would say it's very natural for most people to act that way and to believe that way, that I'm going to interact with a number of people today, whether it's at a store or a doctor's office or wherever it might, a restaurant, wherever it might be. And, you know, those individuals, I'm going to judge them based on how they behave and how they treat me. That will tell me something about the content of their character. How did we lose sight of that? Well, I'll tell you how. When an agenda is so wildly over the top that, because what the former Attorney General, Eric Holder, actually wanted to say, what he should have said had he been more accurate when he said America and Americans are afraid to talk about race, what he's saying is, we make them afraid to talk about race. Liberals make people afraid to talk about race. They use all of these things, all of these moments where you should be afraid of, well, I'm not going to. There's no reason to be afraid. But by the way, I don't know that most people even have to have that discussion. If Mr. Holder or anyone else on the left wants to have it, I'm willing to have it. But I'd rather have the discussion about, I don't know, music, food, traveling, vacation, whatever, other things, because I think that's what happens. Because they cut the door off and sealed it up. They basically took the door out and sealed up the wall so that Americans can't have conversations anymore. And I mean on anything. You can't have the discussion without someone on the left jumping out and trying to shame you. I'm not going to be shamed. You can go at me all you want. But that behavior tells me about the content of your character. When you want to try and shut me down, it tells me that if we were to have a debate, you really don't have any point on the issues. You really can't make your point. You can't debate. So you throw something else up as a distraction, thinking, I'm going to bow down. Well, I'm not.
You know, I start thinking of what, you know, people's, you know, instincts and mindset are just by the simple things in life. For example, one thing I've I've always noticed this, and I notice it all the time now. Whenever I'm walking in a store, how many people open the door for the other person coming in? Especially, I notice this at the one gas station that I get to, which this is another beef that I have, that when you ask for the receipt of the gas station, what is it, about 75% of the time,
go inside.
The machine doesn't work. Yes, so you have to go inside.
Right.
And that's really one of the places where probably that, the, you know, you walk through a door that isn't automatic.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just noticed how many times, irrespective of a person's skin color, clothes they're wearing, ages that, you know, age that they are, that everybody is opening a door for somebody else and mm-hmm. saying, sir, go through, sir,
right.
go through,
right.
sir, go through. And I do the same thing.
Right.
Sir, go through, sir, go through. Doesn't matter who you are. Those little things to me are what show the mindset of the overall society that, you know, that we live in, which is extremely friendly and extremely courteous. It's a lot different from what you actually see on social media each and every day. You know, when you talk about race, and I talk about, you know, being on the basketball court and being the minority on the basketball court for 45 years, never an incident based on race. Nothing.
Right.
Just laughter and fun and camaraderie.
You're out there for one reason.
That
to play.
To play and have and to have fun. And skin color doesn't matter. Age doesn't matter. Nothing, you know, even your ability doesn't matter. Everybody's out there having fun. I forgot to talk about this. This was another thing. I was out playing at this basketball court, and there was a group that was having a huge party,
mm-hmm.
and there were a bunch of people coming over, and it was probably, I'm going to guess, half black, half white, and I realized, oh, it must be some kind of church. And so everybody's coming over, they're playing basketball, and they're leaving, and, you know, having fun. And so it's everybody, you know, everybody mixed together having fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting there playing basketball, and I'm not part of the group, and neither are a couple of other people playing. Well, about a group of three or four people came over. A couple of, I think it was, from my memory speaking, I think it was a couple of black gentlemen, a black woman and a white woman and two white guys. They just, you know, came walking over. Hey, what are you guys doing? You want to come over and have some food? We got some extra food over here. Like, that's the society that we live in.
Yeah.
That's the community that
right.
I live in.
Mm-hmm. That's society.
And I went, well, you know something? I really don't really want to eat anything. I'm playing, but let me just come over and say hi to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I just introduced myself to probably 40, 50 people. How you doing? Name's Gary, playing basketball over here. Thank
right.
you so much. Just
right.
really appreciate the offer. It's great to see this sense of, you know, community here and the sense of kindness and giving that you have and all this. They said, well, this is all part of our, you know, church and everything else. So it's really, really great. I love to see this, and went back to play basketball.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's what we're about. And so when I see all of this going on, I do look at this. You know, because you're talking about the rich, liberal, elite executives at Starbucks and
right.
how they think
right.
society is, instead of understanding if you get out of your gated communities, if you get out of your castles with the moats,
mm-hmm.
and I just throw the moats out because I'm accused of having a moat because of my pool, which I really don't, that if you actually get out, you realize, do they actually intermingle with real people? Do they actually understand how real society is when you get out there?
If they did, it would be quite the opposite of what they were teaching here, based on what we've talked about over the last 30 minutes or so. When they say you need to judge them, prejudge them essentially by the color of their skin, be overly aware of the color of their skin because you don't know what they went through. I treat everybody like that. It's quite the opposite. When I hold the door for somebody, or when I say, no, go ahead, you go first in line, or whatever it might be, if I show somebody respect, it's because I don't know them. It has nothing to it's because I don't know what they're going through. I was at a convenience store the other day. I went to get a Gatorade, and the guy was looking for a specific kind of soda, and I kind of got out of his way, and he goes, my mom has to have an orange soda. And I said, oh, okay, I think they're right over here. I mean, it's in my neighborhood, so I know the store. And I said, I think they're right here down the, in the other case. And he goes, great. He goes, yeah, she's in her final stages, and if she wants an orange soda, I'm going to get it for her. I didn't know that. You don't know what people are going through. You have no idea. And it has nothing to do with the color of their skin. And I heard someone say, I'm going to respect someone until they give me a reason not to. No, I'm going to show them, for me, just for me, my perspective, I'm going to show them that respect. And if they give me a reason, and tell me that they're not a person to be respected, I'll just kindly walk away.
Hey, yeah, every person I meet, I treat as if they're important because I don't know what they're going through. And that's just how I think you build relationships.
I think it's natural.
Right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
The dates and location for the 36th annual Shell Rotella Super Rigs Contest are set. Dave Waterman from Shell has the details.
We are going to be at White's Travel Center in Raphine, Virginia. It's a little bit outside of Lexington, Virginia, right off of I-81 and I-64. It was designed way back when as a way for Shell Rotella to give back to the trucking community, appreciation for all they did and all the support of our brand. It's an event that really encourages truckers to get together, whether they're going to show a show caliber truck or just their daily driver that might have some scratches and dings in it. It's open to all of them. And in fact, we encourage, as the working truck. Judging, of course, is going to take place Thursday through Saturday. We're going to have a light contest taking place on Thursday, and then we'll do a truck parade down to Old Town Lexington. There's also be health checks available for truckers on site. We're going to do the scavenger hunt again so folks can walk away with prizes. Just on the Shell Rotella Super Rigs part of it, it's up to $25,000 in both cash and prizes.
They want to learn more. Where do they go?
Well, they can go to Rotella.com. They can also go to whitestravelcenter.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour is sponsored by Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
By the way, I know earlier that when we were talking about, when we were reading that Starbucks, the one senior executive vice president was giving the example and talking about that, Starbucks is your third place. And Eric said, what's the third place? And I went, I don't know. We actually did know what it meant. It meant
homework,
right?
And
homework and Starbucks.
And for me, the donut shop.
What we were. I guess our point was when you said, "What's the third place?" We were putting ourselves in the place of that person who, when they say this, we know this is your third place. You'd be saying, "What are you talking about?"
Because nobody talks that way.
Right. Nobody talks that way. That was the point where we understood what Starbucks means by your third place, homework and Starbucks.
Yeah, and it the conversation. If it actually did take place, in my mind, a more realistic conversation would be, hey, look, I know you come in a lot. We appreciate that. We want you to feel at home. But please know that we want others to feel at home here, too. So, look, if you don't mind, let me get you some water. And is there anything else I can do? And then if the person persists, then, okay, I tried here, but you're making other people uncomfortable. I need you to leave. End of story. Right. Right. But you can't do that anymore. Why? Well, because the company chose not to have that policy. Again, that's their choice. They can do that. But that doesn't mean there won't be future confrontations between customers and their staff and management in the future. That's going to happen. It'll happen again. And it very well could happen because people feel the need to be the center of attention sometimes, and they want to issue a challenge and see how far the company will go, how they will test their patience in that setting. Expect that to happen at some point.
Your calls and comments, Bob, Stu, and more all coming up following the bottom of the hour, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Anytime, 24 hours a day. Say, Alexa, play Red Eye Radio, and we thank you.
And he's Eric Curley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. 2 weeks from today, I will be in Raphine, Virginia, at White's Travel Center for the 2018 Shell Rotella Super Rigs. It's the 36th annual Shell Rotella Super Rigs, which means now that I have judged, as of this year, half of those events. It'll be my 18th year judging. White's Travel Center, Raphine, Virginia. Again, this is going to happen June 14th through the 16th, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It's located in the beautiful Shenandoah Valley. Wow. Looking at some pictures from that area, and I've been in that area before. It's just gorgeous. White's is the largest truck stop on the East Coast, and there's going to be plenty of room. So drivers, come on by, polish your rig. It's about working trucks. While there will be a couple of show trucks there, this contest is about working trucks. So clean it up and show it off to us, and we hope to see you there. Again, it's June 14th through the 16th at White's Travel Center, Raphine, Virginia, the 2018 Shell Rotella Super Rigs contest, your chance to win part of thousands of dollars in cash and prizes and be on the 2019 Shell Rotella Super Rigs calendar. You can go to rotella.com for more.
We've been talking about the Starbucks training yesterday, and reports came out what was actually said and what part of the training actually is. And we look at it in our humble opinion and say, actually, what you are doing, and we look at the liberal elitism that comes out of the Starbucks management, is you're promoting that people look and judge people by the stereotypes of skin colors that Starbucks comes up with.
Right.
Because if you're not going to be colorblind, if you're going to be color brave, which means you have to notice the skin color and then make a judgment of those people and of those people that you're dealing with, whoever they are. We people is not a statement of ethnicity, but the people that are in that, you know, sitting at that table, irrespective of their skin color, sexuality, age, or gender.
Mm-hmm. You emphasized age.
If you're making a preconceived a stereotype, that's wrong. That's what you're not supposed to do. And in our opinion, that's what Starbucks seems to be actually promoting. We go to Stu in Kansas City. Stu, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Morning, fellas.
Hi.
Starbucks is promoting hyper judgmentalism rather than non judgmentalism. Your discussion reminds me of how my dad taught me to judge people, or to treat people, really. He said that every person you meet, you should treat as if you met them walking across the Sahara Desert.
That they had water.
that they need water.
Yeah. Ah, that's yeah. better. That they well, need water.
May you never thirst, but
right.
And if you track down that little literary reference, good for you. But obviously, you'd be tickled to see another human being. And you wouldn't fixate on the characteristics of that person. It would just be another human being. And you'd treat them that way until they demonstrated that you should treat them otherwise.
You know, I'm always curious, Stu, about other people's lives. I love my life. I really do. But I'm always curious about, you know, what other people experience. What is their day like? What has their life been like? What have they been through? Met a young guy who came to an independent contractor, did a fairly small job on my house last Friday. A guy who moved to Texas a couple of years ago from New York, originally from New Jersey. And just talking about the difference, you know, in living in the Northeast and then in Texas. He loves it here. But here was a guy, a young entrepreneur, happened to be African-American. I didn't know that when I hired him. I didn't care. It didn't matter. I was only worried, you know, concerned about qualifications. And, of course, he was very qualified and had been doing this kind of work for, you know, a number of years, which was interesting because he was also a young guy. So, you know, this was a guy who had this really strong work ethic to the point that, you know, he wanted to, and I said, well, because we were going into Memorial Day weekend. I said, well, I hope you get a great 3-day weekend. He goes, well, I'm going to be working. And I said, well, I hope that's a good thing. And he goes, yes, it is. You know, it means, you know, and that's it, which is more opportunity. You know, I'm always attracted to the people who and always intrigued by the people who look for that opportunity in life, whatever opportunity it is, whether it's business, whether it's, you know, getting more time with the family, and I know a couple that recently downsized and all of this. It's, to me, those unique stories are fascinating. And it's the stuff that sometimes we don't have in common because somebody's lived a totally different life than I have. You know, take, for instance, my co-host. Here's this bachelor guy. By the way, you said you were going to babysit all 6 of my grandkids this weekend, right? Here's this. My life is absolutely beautiful. I have zero complaints. I wouldn't change a thing. I wouldn't. But I'm always fascinated by, okay, what's that like, right? What was the Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd trading places?
Trading Places, yeah.
You know, and I mean, there those movies over the years where they swap roles or they swap lives for, you know, a moment. It's a different perspective. To me, it's always fascinating to look into other people's lives. I would not want to trade my life for anything at all. But I'm always fascinated by those stories because those are the stories that you learn from. In fact, it's not that I want to get away from my life. I look for those stories to enrich my life.
I think that's one of the greatest points. And I'm sitting over here just chuckling because not because you referenced me, but you made me think that over the last year, I've taken Uber quite frequently.
Yeah.
And the drivers have been all ethnicities. And the first thing when I get in an Uber car is I want to know why they're doing it, what their life is like while they're doing it, what is the whole concept behind it, you know, whether they have, you know, whether they're actually doing what it takes to be a good business person.
Mm-hmm.
And they love talking about it.
Right.
And why? Because, again, I love what I do for my life. I wouldn't want to do anything differently. But I'm fascinated by what other people do. And whether it was the driver who picked me up, who is legally in the United States, mm-hmm. who was an Uber driver who drives from 4 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon and then studies because he's trying to pass his boards to become a doctor here in the United States. He was a doctor in Mexico.
Yeah.
But needs to pass the boards to be a doctor here in the United States. And so what he's doing in the meantime is he's driving an Uber vehicle. Or the guy who's helping to put his kids through college and his second job, you know, by being an Uber driver. Or the young guy that I met who is putting in, as many hours as he possibly can.
Right.
And following, knowing what his mileage is, knowing what every expense is, knowing what he can deduct, you know, and doing it and telling me, well, this is what I'm making, I think, per mile here. And I find it fascinating. You know, and a lot of our listeners are truck drivers out there, so they understand, you know, what am I making per mile.
Right.
To me, I find that I may not want to do what other people are doing, but I find it absolutely fascinating that people are doing things that are completely different, something that I may not be interested in all, but I'm fascinated by how they do that.
Well, and it always occurs to me, you mentioned truck driving, how horrible I would be at it. Because there are people, some people are cut out for something, and others just aren't, you know, and I don't know that I would be cut out for a number of those things. My niece moved to New York City several years ago. She works as a nanny and a personal assistant. Her husband went from a youth minister, and I didn't know this. They had not spoken about it, but he always wanted to be a New York City police officer, and he finally got in, and so now he's a New York City police officer. To me, it's not that he's married to my niece. It's just the fascinating story of people in their lives. This is the thing that these are all the things that we have in common. These are the very natural things. When you and I talk about how we treat other people or expect other people to treat us or anything else, we're not sitting here to brag and say, well, we're better. No, actually, we're trying to demonstrate that this is the normal.
It's thing. Normal.
This is the natural thing to do. Most people operate this way.
Well, and the point is, when I mentioned, you know, the Uber drivers, and you mentioned about being fascinated by what people do, I don't care what people's skin color is. I'm more fascinated by what they do and how they live their life.
Right.
And the reason is, as you pointed out, is I get inspiration from it. Yeah. Not that I necessarily, and in fact, many cases, would never want to do what other people do, but then they might not want to do what I do.
Right.
And so it's just how they do it every day, how they figure it out, and how they become successful at what they do, to me, I find fascinating. Their skin color, I could care less about.
Right.
It's the last thing that I'm concerned about. It's so stupid. It's like when my great nephew, mm-hmm. and my nephew is Jamaican Irish, mm-hmm. so he's of course has darker skin color, mm-hmm. and so does my great nephew. Mm-hmm. And so he asked me, you know, it was funny because it was a year ago Easter when I picked him up, and you know, it's funny because you know you get in the car and okay, I got to talk to him about basketball and playing and stuff like this, and he gets in the car. So Uncle Gary, your skin color is different than mine.
Your great nephew.
My great nephew.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that.
right.
And for a 7-year-old, and he starts going through the history of slavery and everything else. Mm. And I just looked at him and I said, your eye color's different from me too. Because he asked why did slavery happen and why do people judge each other by skin color? And I said, it's stupid. I said, you have different eye color than me. Mm-hmm. And we got into, as 7, 8 years old, he's, you know, learning about, you know, why would somebody believe that you're inferior? I go, I don't know. Why would I, what if I thought you were inferior because your eye color's different? Mm-hmm. He just looked at me like, that's really stupid.
Right.
I said, well, then you sort of get it. Your hair's different than mine. Mm-hmm. Your skin color's different than mine. Mm-hmm. Your eyes are different
than mine. You're
taller. You know, I'm taller than you right now, but I won't be.
They won't be in a few years.
I'm older than you.
Right.
None of this matters. It matters, you know, the content of your character. And again, when I said that, he goes, Martin Luther King. I said, yes. So you know that. I mean, that's, you know, that's what matters. So,
right.
I find, you know, when you look at all the Starbucks thing and you see, you know, what the elite liberals are doing there, I think they're promoting, again, stereotyping and bigotry and prejudice by stating that, no, our goal is not to be color blind, but color brave.
Right.
Color brave means you recognize people's differences and then treat them accordingly. Well, the only way you can do that is with stereotyping.
Right.
You can't do it any other way except stereotyping.
You've made a conscious decision. In fact, you've created a policy, really, here within a company to say that you will treat people based on their skin color. I thought we fought against that.
Reject that wholeheartedly.
50 years ago. I thought we've moved away from that.
Now, what kind of coffee would you want? Black or cream and sugar?
I don't know. Right.
How do I make that decision without being a bigot?
Dark roast or blonde?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Coming up following the top of the hour, the latest from Roseanne, newest congressional polls out for the midterm elections. Some interesting things to note. And is President Trump about to become the president of tariffs and slower economic growth? That's one of the questions now that he seems to want to put a 25% tariff on imported automobiles and now put tariffs on aluminum and steel from the European Union, something we saw the stock market react to significantly yesterday when he talked about, you know, possible tariffs with China, that the stock market 2 days ago dropped almost 400 points because of it. There is a reason that when the president promotes tariffs and looks and says, but they will help you here, what he forgets is the number of Americans that it will hurt.
Right.
And when anybody talks tariff, they always, including President Trump, conveniently leave out all the Americans that will suffer because he wishes to help a narrow constituency. That more coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America. 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Just very briefly, I want to bring this up here because we haven't been talking about, you know, the NFL and their policy change.
Mm-hmm.
This was, I believe, was this Jason Riley of the Wall Street Journal? Yes. The NFL stops indulging a dangerous narrative. And this is the great point that he brings up, as we have brought up before, that the whole thing with Colin Kaepernick was bogus to begin with. Forget about all this communist talk and everything else. The thing that it was widespread and institutional racism and the murdering of young black men by police officers was just untrue. And Mr. Riley brings it up in a Wall Street Journal piece where he said, in fact, the use of lethal force has been falling for decades. Police shootings in New York City are down by more than 90% since the early 1970s. In Chicago, shootings involving police fall by more than half, from 44 to 44 from 107 between 2011 and 2015. According to the database compiled by the Chicago Tribune, that means police-involved shootings represented just over 1% of total shootings in the Windy City in 2015. Over the same year, five-year period, police in other major cities with sizable minority populations, including police including Los Angeles, Houston, and Philadelphia, resorted to lethal force less frequently than Chicago police officers. A recent study published in the Journal of Trauma and Acute Surgery assessed more than a million service calls to police departments in North Carolina, Louisiana, and Arizona, and found that cops used physical force in the course of arrests less than 1% of the time. Writing earlier this month about the study's findings, The Manhattan Institute's Raphael Mengel lamented a media landscape that regularly devotes front pages and opening monologues to graphic cases of police force against racial minorities in particular without providing proper context. Despite the slim chances of being subjected to police violence, many Americans continue to harbor fear of the police, substantially attributed to the near-constant coverage of isolated incidents. The NFL's indulgence of this false narrative, perpetuated by the political left, has contributed to the undermining of social trust. Even those who of us who don't watch football should be grateful for this new policy. That's Jason Raleigh from the Wall Street Journal. Mm. So, by the way, who is black? If people don't, if you don't happen to know that, just to put it in, because the first accusation from the left would be, well, what does this white guy know from the Wall Street Journal? Mm-hmm. No, Jason Raleigh is black. And whether it's Heather McDonald that crunched all the numbers from the government and police agencies out there. And she did a great job of covering it and said, look.
And she wasn't looking to prove or disprove anything, really.
No, not her goal.
Okay, what are the real numbers?
What are the real numbers out there?
That's journalism, my mind.
And as we talked about, many, many times, that there are roughly 25 million just car stops per year in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That's just car stops. That's stopping cars. That's not the tens of millions of other stops of citizens by police. Every year, we might have five shootings or five encounters five encounters that may end up in serious injuries where there are questions about what police have done. Sometimes maybe 10 a year. We've seen a lot this year where they've actually gone in the opposite direction. A lot of accusations that have been made. And as we've said now the left is coming out. The narrative is just beginning. We always love to be the ones to bring it to you, probably, if not first, close to first. Mm-hmm. Again, we're not looking to be first. We're looking to be right. Where the left is now stating, well, it might not be a good idea for police to be wearing cameras anyway.
Yeah.
What?
Right.
That may be violating the rights of people by wearing cameras.
Yeah.
Okay, now it's moving in the opposite direction. So I just wanted to bring that up because we didn't talk about the specifics. And we have, of any show, I know we have done a pretty consistent job of breaking down what Colin Kaepernick was all about, not just from police officers, but to his promotion of communism, to promotion of, we want an equal society. Communism is a way to get there. His love of Cuba, the great debate that went on with the Miami Herald, I believe it was, Cuban-American reporter who challenged the things that Colin Kaepernick was saying, because we went to the substance of the actual, not just the protest, but the actual, is there a substance to back what Colin Kaepernick was protesting when that all started a couple of years ago? Last year, it was more Michael Bennett and Mike, because when Michael Bennett, was stopped by police and chased by police, and then he went on to cry racism until the camera, video came out and you found out that Michael Bennett was a complete liar. He lied about it, but the protest was regenerated. People forget about this in 2016, 2017 because of Michael Bennett. He turned out to be nothing but a liar because the video footage came out and police believe there was an active shooter in that casino. That was the call they got, and they said, everybody down, and he got up and ran. And, of course, they chased him because they were looking for the active shooter.
Right.
As they explained to him, in a very common, rational way, when they had him in the police car. Because that video also, and we played the audio of that video here on the air and also posted it, because it was very important to understand that the protests last year were based on a complete lie.
Yeah.
as was the whole Michael Brown case,
because that's,
which Colin Kaepernick jumped on top of, too,
which was
hands up, don't shoot, which was also a complete lie.
Yeah, it was you know, that whole thing was, the whole protest thing was renewed based on a lie.
Yep.
You know, and the media. You know, my question is, if you were in the media and you were covering that story, wouldn't you want to go get the cameras? Wouldn't you want to go get the dash cam or anything that would, you know, support the story? If you believe the story were true, if you believe, you know, it's a professional athlete here that's making this claim, that's a pretty big deal. High profile individual. You would want, if you believe that person was being truthful, you'd want to go get something to say, look, this is horrendous. We cannot accept this kind of behavior from police officers. You'd want to go out and get something. But how long did that go on?
Went on for at least a couple of weeks before the Vegas police released the
actual... They released that video, you know, a couple of weeks into it. But I don't know that that was based on a request from the media. My question is, shouldn't the media have been in there asking for that, asking for any kind of video footage, again, to put something up to accurately depict a situation if you believed that story were true? Because if it were true, it would be horrendous. You know, we've had the discussion based on, you know, Starbucks and the whole thing that's going on, you know, right now. Just as we're supposed to judge on the actions of any individual, which is, I think, how most people judge, we're also supposed to look at any situation and say, look, let's take every single piece of evidence and investigate that thoroughly, so that there is justice. It does not, honestly, it doesn't matter who is responsible for the wrongdoing, whether it's a police officer or someone who is a civilian. Doesn't matter. If whoever's responsible for the wrongdoing, whoever is responsible for that situation, that's where the responsibility is going to lie. What has happened has happened. You can't change the past. Do the thorough investigation, but we're not about that anymore. We must judge a situation. In that case, it went on for 2 weeks. Why? Why? That to me is tragic.
Until the narrative kept building up so much, the Las Vegas police said, we're releasing this because this guy's lying about what happened.
And we went to we have to go back to the state trooper in Texas. He pulls over this woman, and she claims he assaulted her.
Yep. Sexually assaulted her.
Yes.
In the vehicle, by the way.
And
basically a rape.
To the point that the department said, okay, here's all two hours plus of video from the time he pulled her over to the field test. And then the processing from the video when she was processed back at the DPS station. None of what she said was true, to the point that her attorney
apologized.
See, this is the whole thing. The attorney took the case. Now, the attorney is going to take the case, but went public before finding out the truth. If you're an attorney, the first thing you would want to do is let me do the homework. We'll go and we'll request the dash cam and any body cam, anything that's available to us. We're going to get this so we can back up the story so that people don't just see you making a claim. They can actually see for themselves what happened because we believe this is wrong. And if that video is missing, we're going to make an even stronger case that they're trying to cover something up. That's how we're going to approach this. Nope.
Just so you know, because I had wondered this, because this question was asked, was that woman going to face any charges, as she should?
And the answer is no.
It's from 7 days ago, ABC News, a Texas woman could face charges.
But they decided after that story came out, they decided that there won't be any charges pressed against her.
Wow, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Well, because what you're doing in that, and I don't know how long, was it, 48 hours or so before the dash cam video, the two-hour-plus video footage was out there?
Oh, there it is. Okay, woman who accused Texas trooper won't be charged.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You've got to be kidding me.
I know. By the way, there was another DPS officer, and a family member of that DPS officer who had the same name as the DPS officer who pulled her over.
Here it is.
Claims that they were threatened, that person was that officer was threatened, and it wasn't even the officer who was involved.
Here's the reason. Hmm. Because she made her allegations to a jailer and her attorney and not to a sworn police officer, meaning no false report was filed.
Right.
Okay.
Well, was the case filed yet, though?
No.
So they didn't file a case?
No, okay. They didn't file a case.
Because had they filed a case based on her information to her attorney, well, I don't know that that even would have broken the law. I really don't know the law in that case. So, yeah. I guess there could be a civil action, but the officer's likely not going that direction. That's not going to happen. The officer's name was cleared. You know, that's... The trooper's name was cleared.
Right. As the attorney for the woman said, the body camera's footage released directly conflicts the accounts reported to my office. Mm-hmm. That's the officer Daniel Hubbard appears to comport himself professionally during the duration of the traffic stop and arrest and without more should be cleared of any wrongdoing. It is deeply troubling when innocent parties are falsely accused, and I'm truly sorry for any trouble these claims have caused Officer Hubbard and his family. I take full responsibility for amplifying these claims to the point of a national concern.
Now, she had posted something on social media immediately after that event, but I don't know that she named the trooper specifically. Yeah. That's where she would have possibly gotten into slander or something like that, but I don't know that she actually named
trooper. That'd be interesting if she did, whether there's a civil suit there.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier.
Wow, I didn't think about that. Yeah.
But I know that I read the post or part of the post. I don't remember her naming the trooper specifically. That's where you would get into slander. But could there be a civil suit? I just don't expect that trooper to take action.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio. Toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Is Eric Carney and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Butch in Pennsylvania. Butch, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome. Hi, Butch.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
I'm a retired police officer. I worked in Missouri. I retired just before all the Ferguson stuff kicked off. Basically, it's demographics. If you're working in an urban area, you're going to be dealing with more minorities. If you're in a rural area, you're going to be dealing with white pillars of the community, I'll say. You know, and it's proactive policing whenever you're actually interacting with people besides just running call to call. But, you know, everybody wants to complain about it, and that's why a lot of these libtards are complaining about the body cameras, because now it's actually showing that the coppers aren't doing, you know, they're justified in what they're doing. If it wasn't for double standards, most of these left-wing kooks wouldn't have any standards at all.
Well, you know, you make a point and thanks for your service, you know, retired cop, but thanks for being out there. As you know, I'm sure you were for many, many years. It's interesting when you talk about proactive policing, because you're correct. In many urban areas that are led by liberal leadership, they have moved away from that. I know in the town that I live in, our police department is constantly promoting it.
Oh, yeah.
constantly promoting it to the general public. We are out there proactive.
Yep.
We are out there and we are, you know, stopping vehicles, especially overnight. They promote overnight, especially the things that they're, you know, they're doing, and they promote when they stop a vehicle and drugs are, you know, drugs are got it. They put it on their Facebook page.
Yeah,
they put
yeah,
it on their social media. They want people in the community to know that they are proactive in stopping crime. It's really interesting what's going on, because you have that in the suburbs where the proactive things that police are doing, of being proactive, interacting with the public to find out, being not violating people's rights, but being proactive, is something that is expected and promoted. And in big city urban areas, it's what the politicians don't want.
Right. And again, they pretend to be doing something noble. But the most noble thing you can do as a leader of your community is protect all citizens and defend the righteous and weed out the bad guys. That's why you have a police force. Why do they exist? Not to ride around in cars all night, but to find the bad people and keep them off the street. End of story. For VDO Road Log, here's your forecast.
Flash flood watches and warnings will continue for the lower Tennessee Valley, portions of western Kentucky, southern Illinois, and southern Indiana, and parts of the western Carolinas, as well as northern Georgia. Areas that saw rain yesterday east of the Mississippi will continue to see those showers today. The bulk of the rainstorm will stay up in the northeast, in and around eastern Pennsylvania. That's where we'll see a slow-moving warm front today and an area of low pressure that will cause the unsettled weather east of Harrisburg into New York City. More rain for Montana and northern Idaho, as well as Seattle today, where the high temperature will be around 67. Decreasing clouds in Los Angeles, high 69. Denver, sunny and 91. It'll be clear in Dallas today, but temperatures could break 100. Mostly sunny early, then a chance of thunderstorms in Chicago. High today, 89. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Join Gary and Eric in the Octagon now. 1-866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Hi, thanks for being there. All right, do we want to do lessons learned from the whole Roseanne thing? You and I were talking about it in our pre-show meeting.
Yeah.
Lessons learned. First off, Roseanne's not a conservative.
No.
You know, as we said, when it, look, it's nice that this show is out there and there's a Trump supporter. Adds a little bit of balance. But it's not as huge as people were trying to make it. You know, and as we found out, yeah, okay, there was a little bit of it. And if the show would have ran next year, there really wouldn't have been much political talk. Anyway, it would have gone back to what it used to be.
Right, yeah.
And so when I saw... You know, I'm on social media. Conservatives need to band together to support Roseanne. It's like, why?
I don't pretend you and I were walking out together yesterday, as we often do. We actually race for the door to see who can get there first. No, but after the show, we're walking out, and I don't endorse politicians or celebrities. I don't, you know, that whole, it comes back every year, the most trustworthy person. And often it's a celebrity, somebody who lies for a living, you know, that's at or near the top of the list. I don't endorse anyone. I'm not going to defend anyone's actions. What you and I discuss often is the reaction to someone's actions and how someone might be judged and how someone might be, how the double standard might be there. But in this case, the double standard implies that she is a conservative. Now, to her point, her character defends Trump. She has defended Trump. And that's all you need to be the bad guy in today's liberal world. You're the devil.
Right.
I mean, Jimmy Fallon was nearly carried off of the Tonight Show set for tussling the hair. A little hyperbole there. For tussling the hair of then-candidate Donald Trump. You will lose your career over things like that. But this really wasn't about a Trump thing, even. It wasn't necessarily about pro-Trump versus anti-Trump, even. She made a joke. The left is going to use that because her character and she herself has defended Trump. But be careful when you say that it's a double standard or it's because she's not a conservative. She doesn't represent conservatives, never has. She's a comedian. End of story.
The other thing, and you and I had the quick discussion on this as we were walking out the door yesterday, is number one, she's not a conservative. Just look at the things that she has said in the past and tweeted out in the past and said in the past mm-hmm. about Republicans or conservatives or, wish death upon those that went to Chick-fil-A, you know, a few years back. And that is how we debate, because there's this big thing that there's a double standard out there that, you know, that she did it, but others on the other side did it. And yes, there is a double standard. It doesn't justify her way of debating as the way that conservatives should even consider debating. And I thought about this with the last caller who name called, used a particular phrase and who name called. We don't need to name call.
No.
We don't need to name call. We don't need to come up with, you know, fancy little names that we use over and over again that seem to dig. We don't need to do that.
No.
We don't need to argue with the people. We don't need to argue in the same way that the people that are losing argue. They argue that way because they don't have the substance of the ideas behind them. That's the one thing that the lesson that I believe we should take out of this is you don't have to argue like Roseanne. Number one, she's not a conservative. Number two, to argue or debate that way is the way that the left debates. Remember, she has been part of the left for the longest time, so she debates that way. Because she happens to like some of the economic views of Donald Trump, which we're not even particularly sure what they are. She certainly does not approve of social conservatives or the social conservative movement that Donald Trump as president supports. It's something in the economic message, and precisely what we're still not sure of, because she never was precisely sure of it. But since she liked Donald Trump, a ton of people jumped behind her. And that's, as we said, it's cool that the show went on and everything else, and I always thought the show wasn't bad, but I never did anything for me. I watched the first show. And I said, okay, it was pretty good. It was pretty funny. I can't see this going on for a long time. And they made the decision that it wasn't going to go on for a long time, the political part of it. They were going to get back to the normal, you know, part of it. But we don't have to name call. We don't have to race bait in any way. We don't ever have to get close to even having somebody think in any way that we may be racist. That's what they do on their side. We don't need to do that. They do that because they don't have the substance of the argument behind them.
And that's what I
fear when I say, well, if they argue that way, we should be our... No. You may sit there and say it's unfair that we can't argue that way when they do that, and you may say there's a double standard. It doesn't mean we should be debating that way.
Because at the end of it, you know, Roseanne thought she was making some kind of joke. She was being funny. That was her intent. You know, take a stab at the way somebody looks and try and make it funny. That was what she was trying to do, according to her own claim. You know, I made a stupid joke or one stupid joke, and she earlier today or yesterday, you know, talking about how, you know, she's defended minorities and you know, and civil rights, you know, for years and years. Again, it's whatever she does is her thing, and that's on her. She would have to tell you what her intent is. She will have to defend herself. That's the way it. That's the way it goes. We, you and I, don't endorse politicians. We may vote for someone, but the endorsement. The endorsement is even greater. You're standing up, you know, often for that person. As a person, as an individual, I don't know them. There are few people in my life I could endorse. And so when it comes to a celebrity.
We both agree dad.
Yeah, our dads.
We didn't go much beyond
our
dad.
Our dads, you know, my mom, no doubt. I can endorse a number of people in my family. I said a number, not all of them. And I think we know who. One of my grandchildren. I'm keeping an eye on her. But no, I mean, you look at the whole situation and it becomes this back and forth, right, that the left wants you to engage in. And by the way, when we say left and liberal, that's also not name calling. That's who they are. They'll call themselves liberal.
Right.
Progressive. Right. But they're when we said
that's
socialism,
right.
You know, of course. During the Obama years, they said, well, that's because he's black that it is the new N-word, socialism or socialist. Bernie Sanders at that point had been promoting that he was a socialist for years. And now by the end of the Obama years, the liberals got back to saying, oh, no, we're okay with the word socialist. The point being is you and I, or I think most people, when you get down to talking about someone with the opposite mindset. Very simple. It's about the ideas they're promoting. And it's about how they behave. Don't know these individuals personally, whether they agree with me or disagree with me. It's not about a personal situation. I'm not about to fall on the proverbial sword for someone that I don't know.
Well, you know, we even make the case, for example, when we say, well, that person is speaking from ignorance, mm-hmm. because you call somebody ignorant, they believe that's name calling. No, ignorance is actually defined as, you know, if you're ignorant, you lack the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And we said people that are ignorant, and I've even said myself, I'm ignorant of that situation.
Right.
I'm not name calling. I don't have the facts on that. And mm-hmm. so. I'm not going to give an opinion because I don't know. But we always make sure that we define that because it's very important because we don't need to name call. Conservatives don't need to name call. Remember this. The left has to name call because they don't have the substance of the ideas behind them.
And they would rather you
back it up.
They would rather you engage in that behavior
That's
than have a discussion.
They wish you to do exactly what you shouldn't be doing.
And I just don't want to be drawn into that. I want to have the real discussion. I understand that many don't want to have that discussion. I can't force them to do what they don't want to do, but I'm not going to behave in that fashion just to follow them down a road because I believe, well, if they do it, I'll do it too. Well, now you're just engaging in the way they engage, which means you're getting further away from the actual issue, the actual discussion.
So the actual thing that you want changed.
Yep. So.
Well, look at it this way. Don't be baited in what they in what they wish to do so you actually don't get what you want down the road.
It's a distraction.
Don't get so emotionally charged where you believe, well, if they do that, then I'm going to do that back. That's exactly what they want.
Mm-hmm. No, they definitely want you angry. It's okay to be angry at people in government that have power over your lives. It's okay to be angry. But what they want you to be angry about is essentially nothing. They want you to be angry over nothing, over someone else's behavior. Once you're drawn into that, you lose the debate. The debate is over. And because it's not going to be had. Because at that point, it's just the name calling. and the finger pointing. Have the real debate. If you want to stand your ground on real things.
And as we've talked about, there are some people you're not going to be able to convince, but
right.
that's not the goal. The goal is not to convince all people that you're right.
Right.
The goal is to convince, and there is a segment of the population out there that does affect elections.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually saying, what's really going on? Okay, I like the way they debate. Okay, I like the way that they... That politician throws out facts, and I agree with them on that. And you know something, the person that's name-calling all the time, maybe they're not the person.
Yeah.
And maybe they're doing that for a particular reason. Maybe it's true what the guys at Red Eye say. Maybe they don't have the substance to back up what they believe, so they name-call instead, and they demonize instead. And, you know, that's, I think, one of the lessons to learn from Roseanne, especially from the, well, if they do it, we should, but there's a double standard. Okay, we understand the double standard, but don't use that to justify that type of debating or, you know, that type of, I think, social media style of argument.
They're doing it because they don't have an argument.
Yeah.
If you have an argument.
We actually have all the substance to the arguments.
Right.
That's why we don't need to do that.
Stay on topic. Stay on course.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up on the top of the hour, your calls and comments, plus some new midterm polls that are out. And should we start paying people not to shoot people?
Wait. Well, most...
I'm sorry, I can't even get through that.
Most people don't shoot other people. Wait a minute. Is this Bernie Sanders' way... of pretending that he's going to curb violence.
It is a California mayor.
No.
Because
I could see Bernie doing this. We're going to curb violence by paying people not to shoot. Well, that would be everybody. That's right. We're going to pay everybody.
Then we come forward. Look, I was going to shoot somebody, but pay me $1,000 and I won't.
Well, by the way, you all just right. proved that that would be admitting to a crime. I planned on shooting someone. Wait a minute.
I'm conspiring to kill someone. Well, I haven't yet. Give me the money.
I'm planning on shooting someone. That's a crime. You can't do that. You're asking them to admit to a crime. Now pay me. Well, they'll need to be paid because they'll need some bail money. Hey, I was going to shoot somebody, but you got $5? What?
Well, no. Come on. Five. $1,000.
All right. I'm pretty cheap. I'll take 10.
Now, what I wonder, is it $1,000? This is what I'll have to find out here.
Per
incident. The story coming up. What if you say, well, look, well, I'm not just one. I plan on shooting 5 people. Oh, okay. Then you don't just get $1,000. Here's $5,000.
It's the most insane discussion, and it could only come from someone on the far left.
And we'll have it coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.